something big. This is unusual, you know. Normally when you go to speak at a conference, it's some city in the middle of the United States that's exactly like 50 other cities, and you're at some hotel that's exactly like, you know, 50 other hotels, and you're to go out to eat, you go to some restaurant that's a member of a restaurant chain and is exactly like 5,000 other restaurants, and none of that is true here. You know, this is really quite different. And in fact, if you go to most businesses, you know, it feels like going to a conference in the United States, because everybody's using the same software, the same Monopoly software, and I think what we're trying to do is to give the business desktop a little bit of a different flavor, a better flavor. So let's hope that there's a nice analogy between the location of this conference and making the ordinary business desktop a little bit more of an interesting and varied place. So do we have somebody to do slides? My computer's up there. If somebody could find my computer and press the down arrow button, please. Okay, good enough. So on the program, it says I'm going to talk about the future of office suites, and I will talk about the future of office suites a little bit. But I think that, you know, we should pay attention to the news that's going on in the world. And recently, there's been some tremendously interesting news come out of the state of Massachusetts, and I'm sure some of you followed that story, but I thought I would invest a little bit of time talking about what actually happened in Massachusetts and what I think it might mean for open office and open source software and, in fact, office software in general. Before I do that, I'm going to take your picture. So. Okay. So would everybody please wave? Thank you. So Massachusetts is a state that has about three times as many people as Slovenia, and I think in terms of money they probably have more than three times the money of Slovenia. It's a small American state, but it's a very rich one. It's formally called the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and so if you're reading the correspondence you will see a lot of references to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, but really it's just a state. So the end of the story happened, what are we today, the 28th? 29th. So the end of the story happened 8 days ago. Next slide, please. There we go. So this is hard to read, but it's a slide from the Massachusetts Government Information Technology Division. I would have put the URL up there, but it's one of these content management URLs that would go on for three lines. And this is actually pretty easy to find if you just go to mass.gov. And at the end of the long involved evaluation, study, work group process, they came up with this thing, the ETRM, and I forget what ETRM stands for, but E's electronic, anyhow. And notice that this is available in two formats, PDF and Open Document, so that's nice. And the interesting part is actually down here at the bottom, where it talks about data interoperability, data management, data formats, and records management. And it's the third point that this was all about. The objective is to establish some rules for what the employees and divisions of the state government are allowed to use for data formats. And it's important to note that in this whole process, they never mentioned Microsoft Office. They never mentioned OpenOffice. They never mentioned any other office suite. All they ever talked about was data formats. And that is actually, I think, the correct way forward. So let's take a small poll here. How many people here in the audience, I can't see you that well, but now I can, think that you'll be using 5 years from now the same office software that you're using today? I see one or two hands. You're using VI, right? Yeah. Okay, so how many of you think that in 5 years from now, some of the data you have today will still be interesting or at least legally required to be preserved? Okay, I see a lot of hands. This is not a new lesson. And it's an old lesson and it's an obvious lesson. And the lesson is that the lifespan of information is much, much longer than the lifespan of software technology. And in the big picture, the value of information is much, much higher than the value of software technology. And the government of Massachusetts, and it's not the only government in the world, has decided to stop focusing on technology and focus on information. Because of the many obvious benefits that come out of this, you know, the first obvious benefit is that if you have your data in an open, standardized format, well, in 5 years, you'll still be able to read it. Now, this is not an imaginary benefit. Let me tell you a little story. I was involved with the creation of XML, and XML was based on a previous standard called SGML that was never very popular or very successful. It became an ISO standard in 1986, and today, 100%, that's 19 years later. Today, 19 years later, 100% of the original SGML documents are readable without data loss. Zero data loss. Now that's just not possible with any existing proprietary word processor format, and it's not going to become possible. So that's the benefit. So let's talk a little bit about the process. The arguments around the Massachusetts were long and they were furious. And on one side you had IBM, Sun, the open source software community, and on the other side you had mostly Microsoft and a few, you know, there were some other people who thought it would be okay to use the Microsoft formats. And one of the arguments that we introduced into the process quite early on came from some correspondence that we'd had with the European Commission. Next slide. I don't know who Pedro Ortun is, but he's obviously he's somebody very senior over the European Commission IDA, interdepartment something or other. And I think his words speak for himself. And they're saying that, you know, if you want to generate and use data in the government, and of course you do, it's totally unacceptable that the data comes with software attached. The data needs to live independent of the software. Now that was in a letter that Mr. Ortun sent to Jonathan Schwartz, our president. And in that letter he made two requests of Sun. First, that we would support taking the what we then called the Open Office format to ISO as an ISO standard. And secondly, that we work very hard on doing converters for Open Office for any data formats that Microsoft might choose. And I actually had the very pleasant task of going to Brussels and standing up and saying, yes, we'll do those things. So the open document format will probably become an ISO standard. And I think the Open Office guys are working very hard, the way they always do, on keeping track of whatever the latest Microsoft data format is. So the story in Massachusetts came to a head. It went on for a couple of years. And the Massachusetts government did an initial announcement that they would accept the Open Document format and the Microsoft Office 12 formats. And then about 2 months ago, they changed their mind. They said that no, the only acceptable formats would be Open Document and PDF. As you can well imagine, Microsoft was quite unhappy about this. And so there was a big high-level meeting was called by something called the Massachusetts Technology Leadership Council, which is a political lobbying organization. It's an organization of technology businesses to try and make political influence. And at this meeting, there were the two chief representatives of the Massachusetts government, and there were people from Sun, IBM, Microsoft, and some other people. And some very interesting things were said at that meeting. So, next slide, please. And at one point, it got very dramatic. The fellow from Microsoft stood up and said, "You are doing an assault on the intellectual property of American corporations." So Eric Chris, who's the Secretary of Administration and Finance, who I understand, unfortunately, is leaving the government and going to probably a higher paying job, said this, and you know, this is an incredibly important statement, is that the role of intellectual property is a big debate right now. There are very strong disagreements about should intellectual property be patented? Should intellectual property be copyrighted? Should everything be done on essentially the GNU basis? And I think it's fair to say that as an industry, we really don't have agreement on what the proper role of intellectual property in the technology space is. But I think it's very easy to have strong agreement that the correct role for intellectual property in data formats is zero. There is no excuse for public data to be using any data format that has any intellectual property issues. And that was actually one of the main things that caused Massachusetts eventually to reject the Microsoft data formats. I'm not a lawyer, but if you read the licensing terms around the Microsoft data formats, they're a little bit troubling. First of all, they say that they think they have patents that make it impossible to use these data formats without infringing the patents. They don't say what the patents are, so there's some mystery there. And then they grant a perpetual free license that has some weird terms on it. Apparently you can't do a subset. You know, at all times, everything you do must be a full implementation. And then there's this weird language about saying, and it is clearly the case that, I don't have the exact words, but along the lines of that anybody who is using this in read-only mode on government documents is licensed. Well, that's nice. But suppose I also want to use private sector documents, or suppose I want to, you know, read a document, change it, and write it on my license. Nobody knows. In the case of open document format, there's zero ambiguity. If you go and read the intellectual property statements on file at the OASIS Standards Organization, you will find that all the people who were involved said, as far as we know, we don't have any patents that cover this, and if we do, there's an unrestricted royalty-free license to use them. So you can absolutely be sure that you can deploy software around open document formats without getting a call from anybody's lawyer. Now, that is actually an interesting outcome because, and I'll talk about this more in a minute, it means that everybody essentially has a free license to start writing software to do interesting and useful things with open document format data. And I think that has a huge impact that we haven't really begun to understand yet. A couple of other interesting things that were said at that meeting is that Massachusetts is not doing this out of idealism. They're doing this out of pain. They have had a lot of severe pain in the past because of having important information in proprietary formats. And then, you know, the people who understand them quit, and the computers that can read them break, and so on. I don't know how it is here in Slovenia or in Europe, but in America, they have, I should say, I'm Canadian, so I say they about the Americans. They have very strong public access to information laws. So, in principle, in many states, if I say, I require a copy of my tax statement from 1991, well, the government is required to give that to you. Now, if unfortunately your tax statement from 1991 is in Microsoft Office 3 format, there's a big problem. I don't know, would Open Office read Microsoft 3 doc format? Maybe, but I guarantee that Microsoft Office won't read it. So there's a big problem there. So the reasons for standardizing on open formats are not only idealistic, they are very, very practical. Now this is the really interesting one. The state of Massachusetts has about 50,000 desktops. That's a pretty big number. And like most businesses, a high proportion of those desktops are fairly old computers running Windows 2000, maybe before, and clearly they are not going to be able to run, you know, the latest software. So they did an estimate and they figured out it would cost on average about $1,000 per desktop to upgrade so that they would be able to use the latest open document, the latest open open formats from Microsoft, and the comparable cost for Open Office was about $5 million. Now, these are very rough estimates. These are just, you know, back of the envelope. And of course, you know, everybody will give discounts and everything costs more. But even if you say they are wrong by a factor of two, if you say that, you know, the proprietary option is only half that much, and the open option is twice that much, it's still a very attractive business proposition. Now, as the representative from the ministry said here earlier, this is not the whole picture. There are, of course, the maintenance costs going on. So let's not conclude that in principle, you know, open office is 10 times as cheap as the alternatives. But I think in the case of Massachusetts, it was clear that this was a much, much cheaper option. So anyhow, so after all this, Massachusetts made the final decision, and as of September 21st, this is the official status. Now they're really going to have some interesting transition, I think, transitioning 50,000 desktops away from proprietary data formats, and I think it will be very interesting for all of us to watch and see how they succeed and what their problems are, because this is not a final victory. This is, you know, just one step forward, but I think it's a very, very important step forward, and I think that any of us who are in North America should do what we can to help them succeed. Now, as part of these arguments, our friends from Microsoft made two very, very interesting points that I would like to discuss a little bit. So they made two very strong arguments, and they said, well, you should use our technology for two reasons. First of all, the open document format is a fixed data format. It is one particular set of XML tags and attributes and a format for storing them. And they said, that's not good enough. You need to be more flexible. They say, you should use our technology because our technology allows you to invent your own data formats for your own public administration, and that's good. The second point they made is that they said, you should use our technology because our office data formats are carefully designed to be integrated with data-centric applications. They have provided XML schemas for all of them, and they have provided all sorts of gateways in their software so that you can, you know, move easily from a database to a spreadsheet or to a presentation or to an office document. And this is important, and you should do it. Well, I think both of those points are very strong points and worth considering. And I think one of them is wrong and one of them is right. So, next slide, please. I think that's completely wrong. I think in the case of public administration documents, custom schemas are harmful, not helpful. I come from the era of SGML, and you know, SGML, the whole idea of SGML and part of the idea of XML is that you can invent your own language to solve your own problem. And when SGML was created in the 80s, there were immediately a bunch of companies created to create software that would allow you to invent your own languages and then to edit your own languages and then to typeset your own documents and so on. And basically, none of those companies made any money. None of those companies still exist. It turned out to be a really bad business. And what were the reasons for that? First of all, it turns out that in principle, it may be possible to invent your own language, but in practice, it's incredibly difficult. It takes a long time, a lot of money, a lot of work. We're talking, you know, 6 months to a year just to, I mean, how long did it take to do the open document format? It wasn't a trivial task. So it's very, very hard. And it also is very easy when you design a new language for your own purposes. It's very easy to design a very bad language. You know, languages are not easy to design. It's easy to get it wrong. And the notion that every, you know, government department or every private sector department will easily go and create their own languages and they will get good results is a very foolish idea. It's a hard thing to do. The second problem is that once you've created your own language, then the task of creating the software to allow authoring and editing and storing it, and the software to process it to do useful things, is very expensive and very time consuming. And that software is limited in its application to one language, to your individual language. And So it's actually of quite limited value. And then every time you change your language, you'll have to change the software, and that's expensive. It turns out that the network effect applies here. The business value of maximized interoperability comes when people agree to use a common language. And the best example of that I can give you is the World Wide Web. For many years before the web, there were many different ways of publishing network information. There were many different ways of doing hypertext online. There were many different ways of doing online information retrieval and search and navigation. But then in the early 90s, everybody agreed, well, we will agree on a data partner, HTML. HTML is actually not the world's greatest data format. It has problems, it has limitations. But the power that came when everybody agreed to standardize on one data format, it changed the world. The whole world of online information exploded. We had, you know, it turned the world inside up. And the basic thing that happened was everybody agreed to share one particular data format with its semantics. Now, this isn't, you know, never happened. Historically, in the world of Office documents, everybody has agreed to share a format, namely Microsoft Office format, but it's not a format that's designed to be open or a format that's designed to be reusable. But now we have the potential to explode the world again, to turn everything inside out again, if we get widespread use across the Office desktops of the world of a common, open, unencumbered, reusable data format, namely open documents. So we could see an explosion over the next decade that is like the web happening again. And that would be fun. I'd love to see that happen. So I think that, you know, custom schemas are harmful, not vital. So now let's think about the second point there. Integration with data-centric applications. That's 100% right. And Microsoft is totally right there, and we should all be listening carefully to what they say and watching what they do. Historically, the world of business applications and the world of desktop documents have been two separate worlds. That's crazy. The lifeblood of any business is the documents that capture its knowledge. Knowledge is something that really only lives between people's ears, but to the extent that it lives outside of people's heads, it lives in documents. And those documents should be part of the ordinary business systems that we use every day in our office work. And so I agree 100% that there should be strong integration between data-oriented systems and the document systems. Now, the good news is that the open document format is actually much better suited than the Microsoft Office formats for this kind of work, because it was not designed to capture the semantics of one software suite that is 20 years old. It was actually explicitly designed to be reusable. So there's no reason why we shouldn't see this. Now, I'd like to tell a story. The first time I got involved with XML was actually before XML happened, and it was in 87, when I took a job at the Oxford English Dictionary Project. The Oxford English Dictionary is the world's largest dictionary in any language. It has about 400,000 entries. And for each word, it has the word, the language that it came from, its meanings, and then for each meaning, a bunch of quotations to illustrate that meaning, you know, from Shakespeare, from John Le Carré, from the Bible, from, you know, bicycling magazines, from everything. And each quotation has a date, the author, and so on. So we had this in a tagged format that was very much like XML, only XML hadn't yet been invented. And when we finally got it loaded on the computer in this format, we did a cooperative research project with some English language faculty, where we analyzed the text, and we went for each word, we figured out the language it came from, because that was in the text, and we found the date of the earliest quotation, so the date that it arrived in English. And then we were able to do a very, very interesting graph studying a set of statistics, studying what centuries English gained words from what languages. So English has a lot of words from Norwegian, has a lot of words from German, has a lot of words from French, and from some other languages. And you could see a graph of how English grew and where it got the languages from. It was a fantastic paper. It was accepted at a very prestigious language journal. Now, when the Oxford lexicographers, the people who write the dictionary, heard this story, they were horrified. They said, well, we didn't design it to do that. why do we care what you care, what you designed it for? But we can't be sure that that will produce correct results. Well, I'm sorry, you know, the data was there. And this is maybe the central lesson of XML, is that once you have data in an open format, you can use it to do new things that the original designers of the document did not intend, did not think of. You all have treasures. You have fabulously valuable treasures sitting there locked up in your office documents. And we now have, with Open Document Format, a standard base so that anybody who wants to go and extract that treasure and do something with it can write software, and that software has a high chance of working on every Open Document Format document in the world. And I hope that's soon going to be a lot of documents. Now, I'm speaking to a European audience here. I have observed that the leadership in Open Document Format and Open Office, it's not an American thing, it's not a Canadian thing, it's a European thing. So I think the software developers of Europe have a chance to take the lead in a really big, really important new area of software development, and that's integrated applications that are both document-centric and data-centric. Spreadsheets obviously can be connected to databases, but so can printed documents, so can presentations. It should be routine to have an application that reads a document, extracts things from it, adds value to it, writes it out again. And I'm quite sure that we're going to be seeing a huge amount of that, and I really, really hope that Europe takes the lead in doing this. So those, I think, are the lessons out of Massachusetts. So in my last 10 minutes now, I'll talk about the official title of the talk, which is the Future Directions in Office Documents. So next slide. So the traditional office document has had these characteristics. The traditional office document is something like a contract or, you know, a project plan. Well, you negotiate it, you use the change management facility, eventually it gets finished, everybody agrees, you print it, you sign it, you put it in a filing cabinet. It's not the voice of a person, it's the voice of a corporation. And a document, typically, is an isolated thing that exists in only and of itself. This is the traditional pattern of office documents. Well, that's boring. I mean, it will never go away. You know, as long as the world exists, we will have contracts, and we will need, you know, word processors to do contracts, and we will have budgets, and we will need spreadsheets to do budgets, and we will have speeches, and we will need presentation packages to do the speeches. But that is not the whole world anymore. In fact, that is a small and shrinking proportion of the world. What I do, a large part of my job, is worrying about the world of weblogs and wikis and syndication and RSS. This is an incredibly fast-moving world. Next slide. This is just a weblog from one of the NetBeans guys, or actually the Java Studio creator. And look at that. That's a document. You know, the richness of presentation of that document is comparable to a word processing document. It's got graphics. It's got, you know, integrated graphics here. It's got a sidebar with a calendar. It's got some cute stuff at the top. It's full of hyperlinks. Do you think he used OpenOffice to write that? I don't think so. Why not? You know what? The software that we use to write that is terrible. The authoring software for online content is mostly very, very bad. If you are a professional web designer, there are packages like Dreamweaver that are okay. But the revolution of the last 5 years, with the advent of weblogs, with the advent of the long tail, with the advent of the writable web, is that everybody is now a web author. And everybody now is writing content for the web with software that is much, much worse than Microsoft Office 3. I mean, it's just really terrible, horrible stuff. In many cases, it's actually just a text area in a browser, and you have to type in the HTML tags yourself. Clearly, authoring for the web can never be WYSIWYG, because the web is a dynamic, fluid medium. But it should be easy. You know, you should be able to insert a link without having to know what the tags are. You should be able to set up a page so that it looks nice and resize it. I mean, this page is really nicely designed. I don't have a live browser here. But if you grab the corner of this thing and change the shape of the window, all the pieces flow together. The text part here shrinks. The fixed size part stays fixed size. And it all maintains its design integrity. Well, that's actually quite a hard effect to achieve. In fact, that effect is completely impossible to achieve for an ordinary person. Well, what was the revolution of Office Software Suites? The revolution of Office Software Suites is that it allowed ordinary people to achieve document effects that previously were only available to professionals. Well, in the area of online writing, we haven't had that revolution yet. Ordinary people, if they want to get something good looking and professional, have to go find a software geek to write code for them, or they have to know how to do HTML themselves. So I think that we need to have that revolution. I think that my word processor should be able to blog. I think that my spreadsheet should be able to do wikis. I think my presentation package should be able to read RSS feeds. I think the days of static, standalone, corporate documents are becoming smaller and smaller and less interesting. The final thing that I wanted to point out is that the voice here is personal. This is not Sun writing. This is Tor Harvey. This is one guy's opinion. So historically, the legacy of Office Suites has been to empower people, but then mostly they are used to write corporate-style documents. Well, I have hopes that when we get the next generation of Office Suite, it will be totally centered on empowering the voice of individuals. Now, just to convince you that this is not just a small thing, here are some numbers from June. So this is from Technorati. This is the number of weblogs that they know about. And the numbers there on the sides are too small, but the numbers go from 2 million at the bottom to 16 million at the top. So in the period from, those lines are 5 months. So in about the last 2 years, we've gone from almost zero known weblogs to today, we think there's about 20 million. And the doubling in size is occurring about every 5 months. Well, you know, I've seen this graph before. This graph looks exactly like the graphs from the early days of the web. You know, when the number of servers coming online, the number of web pages, the number of people with number of browser downloads, they look exactly like that curve. So there's a huge opportunity out there in this whole area of authoring and of weblogs and dynamic publication. Next slide. This is the number of blogs created per day. We are now up to the point where there are approximately 2 or 3 blogs created every second. Now, to be fair, a lot of blogs are trash, garbage, and also a lot of blogs have 2 postings and are then abandoned. But, next slide. Here's the real measure. This is the number of blog posts per day. So that's a real, actual measure of the activity of the blogging community. It's now up over 1 million per day. Well over 1 million per day, new entries. And all of those entries are being written with lousy, inconvenient, bad, primitive software. So why do we have lousy authoring software for blogs and excellent authoring software for contracts? I think we should fix that. So I think the direction is obvious. The current standard desktop software suites is aimed at creating static documents. I'm sorry, static documents are boring. And online static documents are really boring. I mean, paper is actually a much better medium for reading text than a screen. So why would you read text from a screen? Because it's dynamic, because it changes. You go there tomorrow and it's different from today. So authoring systems start to need to be optimized for dynamic documents. Print is never going away, but the proportion of the time that people spend reading is more electronic and less print every year. Someday, we will have electronic displays that have quality equal to print, you know, 1,000 plus dots per inch, flexible, you can fold it and put it in your pocket and it will work. That day, maybe paper will eventually go away. It's not happening soon, but still, the point is that we need to optimize our authoring for display rather than for print. Now, this is huge. This is going to be very, very difficult for office software, because for so long, office software had the dream of WYSIWYG. You know, what you see is what you get, and what they meant was what you get on a paper, and screens are radically different from paper in many ways. So we need to start thinking about re-architecting our notion of display. I mean, in an ideal world, you should be able to take any office document and display it electronically and have it flexible and resizable and fits into the window. That's hard, but I think it's a very interesting problem. I already said this. Historically, office suites have been designed for creating corporate documents. We need to make them more individual. And finally, the support for hypertext in office suites is still pretty bad. And the notion of writing something online that has no hyperlinks in it is really stupid. You know, you should never publish anything online without hyperlinks in it. If you publish something online without hyperlinks, you're saying, I know everything on this subject. There's nothing else in the world that's interesting. You know, just read this and you'll be finished. Well, I'm sorry. You don't know anything of everything about any subject. Bill Joy, one of the founders of Sun, famously said, no matter how smart your company is, most of the innovation is happening elsewhere. It's absolutely necessary for any document that's going to be relevant to be part of the global, dynamic, online, personal, hyperlinked conversation. And that, I think, is by far the most important future direction for all office software in general and for OpenOffice in particular. Thank you.
Out of it.